Articulate Warbling would like to encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. Also, if you feel so inclined, please leave us a rating or review.
Hello and welcome to Articulate Warbling. I am Zach. Laura is here with me. She is, but this episode is not about us. No. It is about Ryan Madej. Have I fucked up that pronunciation, Laura?
I don't think so.
Ryan Madej.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is as well. Now, Ryan kindly sent me a reviewer's copy for his recent release, which is the Marianas Trench, part of his tetralogy, I believe he calls it. And I basically said to him, instead of me just doing a review, me warbling, let's use this platform for fellow artists, indie artists, experimentalists, to talk about their work and do readings. And previously we have had Richard Cabot. I've correctly pronounced Richard's surname. Yes? You're putting your thumbs up. This is a podcast, Laura. We need to hear you.
What if Richard hears me, say yeah, and then it turns out I'm wrong, then I look like a giant pin.
What, like a silent T? Richard Cabot.
Cabot. I'm pretty sure it's
Richard Camembert. Richard Cabot and also Rebecca Grandston. Oh my god, I've actually done a podcast recording where I've pronounced the author's names correctly. Thank you. Yes, I'm very. Now, this is a special guest slot. So today on Radial Articulate Warbling, we have Ryan Madej, who gives us great insight behind the series of books that the Marianas Trench is a part of. And also following that will be my review, my nepotistic review. But, you know, I kind of felt that instead of me just putting out a short 10-minute segment isolated on its own, like me and Laura have said on social media and on loads of episodes, we want fellow artists to get the spotlight. I know we're not like a million subscriber type podcast, probably not even beyond a certain 100 people, but we want it, the intent is there that we want to give other people the opportunity to be recognised. I think that's it, isn't it?
That's it.
And so, instead of me warbling on, I introduce you to Ryan Madej. Take it away, my friend.
Good evening. First of all, I would like to thank Zach for this opportunity to talk about my work a little bit here for his podcast. I guess the first thing I'd like to say is, yeah, the Marianas Trench was the book that I started some 20-odd years ago with the intention of writing a trilogy that eventually turned into a tetralogy, which I finished... oh my goodness, just about 2 years ago now. The Marianas Trench, yeah, went through many incarnations before I actually came to the final version that I have. And unlike the other ones in this series of the Marble Corridor, Threshold and the Key, and The Last Train, this one is not as experimental as those other volumes, but definitely has a dark feel like the other ones do as well. It's always a difficult thing for an author to talk about their work, you know, objectively, or to see it, you know, in a different light as a reader. You know, so we often try to distance ourselves from our work, or at least I do. Anyway. But I do hope that you enjoy this passage and the first chapter that I'm going to read for you from the Marianas Trench. And I would hope that you would read the subsequent volumes as well to get, you know, kind of a full scope of what I was trying to achieve experimentally and esoterically with these works. So I will, read the first chapter from the Marianas Trench, and it is called Passage In. My time fades in the rain as the night passes through the space of my fingers. The days are unimportant and obscure by my estimations, but as my narrative unfolds, perhaps the days, weeks, months, and years that have passed will come into focus. The lounge I sit in is a stone's throw from the city limits. a city or a town, I can't seem to remember which, whose name I can't pronounce, where the clamor of bells and whistles from ships blend in beautifully with the hypnotic storm outside. Sheet lightning illuminates the darkness, thunder rattles in my head. The sea swells and recedes nearby like the images and thoughts through my mind. It's been 3 days since I've slept. I look around myself and see no sad faces, only joy and contentment. Yet I cannot dissolve into a euphoric state like those around me. If I concentrate hard enough, nobody seems to move. Frozen. Paralysis numbs these people right before my eyes. Lights flicker in the semi-darkness. My thought is half finished, leaving me one complete breath before everything starts moving again. There are spots of blood on my sleeves, but no one seems to notice. Trickling down, down to my wrists. I see the blade before my mind's eye, gleaming, the death instrument. I also see myself standing over her naked body, hand touching her breast, tongue seeking tongue, then nothing. That is where the thought ends. The whole of my story starts with her, or perhaps it's better to say them, the twins of my passions. I light a cigarette and order another drink. The night is young and I have much more to say. The meek shall inherit the earth. The meek shall inherit nothing. I closed my Bible long ago and opened this notebook in order to prove it. These walls have shut me in. I strain my eyes by looking off into the corners of the lounge where a couple are swapping spit, their shapes turning into strange melting formations, a pile of liquid flesh. Sir, are you doing all right? Looking up while concealing my sleeves, the buxom waitress, face and all, has begun to slip away from her bones just as the couple did a moment ago. Weakly smiling, I try to respond, but instead I just wave her away with my hands and let my face fall into my palms. We'll be closing in half an hour. I barely hear what she says. The thunder and piano tinkles from a Beethoven sonata pass into nothingness. Tap, tap, crash. Tap, tap, tap go the keys. Then, crash, goes the foot of God above me. Finally, I lift my pen. The sonata has brought out the moon in my mind. That and a sultry pair of eyes with a soft, penetrating gaze. I know those eyes. The moon greeted me one evening in the fall, looking as though the sky was engulfed by its sheer size, while I was on my way to see Ophelia. Hands in my pockets, smoking a sweet cigar, calmed by the silence. I stopped at a beach to admire the deep seas and craters that were highly visible that night. As I sat with the cigar dangling from my lips, I could see Ophelia's face in the moon dust, sad, lonely. It had been weeks since I felt her skin, her teeth biting the pillow, her hands tied with silken ribbon, her blood on my fingers. In a dream only days before, she was cowering in a darkened corridor, weakened by some intangible force, and I was standing over her waiting patiently for the death cry, my tears falling at her feet. I cannot explain it, but I felt a terror unlike any terror before as she screamed. The moon was full and seemed to bleed crimson. I felt invigorated and chilled in equal doses. The lounge is now closed for the evening. I'm standing in the tiny foyer waiting for the rain to stop. Slipping my journal into my coat, I pull up my zipper to light a cigarette. Not far away, the sea stretches out before me, and I see nothing but a deep blackness, and I hear only the sounds of the rain pounding the pavement. My hotel room awaits me, but I will not sleep. Stepping out into the downpour, the rain claws at me like a rabid animal attacking an unsuspecting stranger. I try to shield myself from its blows as I break into a run in the direction of the hotel. No lights guide me. Soon I'll be chilled to the bone. The hotel room. Where did I leave off? Ophelia. Too much water, so now I forbid my tears, but there is certainly more to say. I arrived at her apartment late that night. She answered the door wrapped in a silken kimono a friend had brought from Japan, her chestnut hair tied back and her lips a dark red. What took you so long, Em? I told her I had stopped to admire the moon. She laughed at my comment. Closing the door behind me, I kissed her hard on the mouth. Cold, very cold lips like kissing a corpse. One of her breasts, the left one, I remember because there was still the smallest evidence of a bite I'd given her the last time, came tumbling out of the kimono waiting for me to grasp it with my hands. Her hair glittered in the hallway light as I kneaded her breast, her peppermint breath warming my neck. First we need a pick-me-up, I recall her saying. I knew what she was referring to. On the table in the living room was the Theban meerschaum pipe shaped in the likeness of a blooming rose cradling a piece of opium. Sitting down, she opened her kimono, reclined with her pipe in hand, and beckoned me with her painted fingers. Soon the room filled with smoke. The meerschaum turned a dark orange as we nearly lost sight of one another, but we were energetic enough to paw and intertwine our bodies. Her lips were no longer cold. Somehow we found our way to her bedroom, whose lights had turned blue. Naked and drugged as we were, her skin, the hue of a forgotten sea, I looped a piece of nylon rope around her neck and entered her from behind. My mind hurtled away from me as the rope tightened and our bodies moved in rhythm. As the night wore on, the opium wore off, and we sat upright in Ophelia's bed, lighting each other's cigarettes when she turned to me with her glazed eyes that suddenly became serious. "Can I tell you something, Em? Something important? Or are you still too stoned to really talk about anything?" Tapping out my smoke, I turned onto my belly and asked her to continue. "I've been wanting to cut again, Em. Other than seeing you, I really felt like I have nothing left to give the world but my body. In saying that, you have become the world to me, as fucking stupid as that sounds. Very little gives me any pleasure. Only you." "Should I be concerned?" I asked calmly. "Maybe you should." I laughed and proceeded to light another cigarette for her. She casually put it into her lips and shot me a look of disdain, probably because I hadn't given her the response she wanted. Opening the bedside drawer, she produced a tiny blade, no bigger than a penknife, that held flecks of old blood. Leaning back on the pillow, she played with the knife while she smoked. "Do you believe in prophecy, Em?" "Only in personal prophecy." "So you're a prophet, then?" "Something like that, only I dream of something more than being a prophet." "And what would that be?" she asked curiously. "That's for me to know and you to find out, my dear." With those words, she no longer questioned me, but I could tell I had left her intrigued. As she put the blade away and flicked off the light, I turned on my side to look out the window, searching for the lunar disk. Nothing. With sleep slowly weighing upon me, I remembered a prayer that had often given me solace. It went as follows. "O Divine One, grant me the strength to pull the trigger. Grant me the wisdom to know when I have been more than a sadist and a mediocre masochist. Grant me these and I worship you 1,000-fold before it's all said and done. Amen." Closing my eyes, I felt myself smiling. I'm alive, despite my idea that I'm truly dead. A twitching in my mind keeps pounding out a signal that a remnant deep within me glows with a pale light. I'm back at the lounge, for the hotel was too silent and cold for my liking today. I stare blankly out of the window, my face half reflected in the glass. Pools of water have risen in the sunken concrete. I sit alone near the exit. The bartender is playing solitaire, a small cigar hanging from his lips, and his ashen features are clouded in smoke, disappearing and reappearing in waves. Waves like the sea, waves outside the window, waves of thought, cresting and forming at the edges of my mind, ebbing and flowing. A svelte young woman with crimson hair sits down at the bar. She reminds me of the other twin, the one who got away, the one I'd been after ever since she disappeared. Before Ophelia, there was Red. After Red, only a series of dead ends. I can still vividly picture that night we met. The sky lit up in cherry blossom and citrus orange, the streets of Midtown alive with the usual intoxicating cries, empty banter, and strangeness. She wore black gloves, perfectly fitted to her slender fingers. Her facial dimensions were simple, but sharpened around the eyes, bringing out their pale blue. I could never look deeply into Red's eyes, for often there seemed to be a dark stream crossing over her face. She smoked Egyptian cigarettes and played chess. Yes, chess. I nearly forgotten her obsession with the game and its nostalgic flavor systems and general miscellany. During our first conversation together, I discovered she was a rather experienced player, consequently leading me into a match with her less than a week later. She lived in one of the better areas of Midtown, deep in the Western Quarter, in a stylish house that seemed to suit her tastes. Upon entering, I noticed that she kept a wide collection of Japanese no masks on her wall, along with numerous odds and ends that felt foreign. "Care for a drink before we sit down?" "Scotch if you have it." "Neat. Good choice. I'll join you in one of those." As she prepared the drinks, I noticed the board had already been set up in the living room with the pieces perfectly aligned. We sat across from one another and clinked our glasses. I took the opportunity to light her cigarette, which she graciously accepted. "You're very much the gentleman. It seems to be a rarity here in Midtown." "Actually, when we ran into one another, I had arrived by train that night. You offered me a light then, too. Are you always in the habit of picking up strange women?" "If the mood strikes me." "I'm glad it did. I could tell right away we'd get along just fine." "How so? Are you truly that insightful during first meetings?" "My perceptions of people are rarely inaccurate, which comes from many years spent hunched over chessboards such as this one. I bought it in Prague several years ago when I was traveling through Europe." It really is beautiful. Yes, shall we begin? The game progressed quickly, as did our consumption of scotch and cigarettes. By move 20, I started to lose focus, and I could see a different side of Reg emerge on those 64 squares. Look at the board carefully before making a move. I prefer to move the pieces my own way, thanks. So in other words, stupidly and haphazardly? Is that what you're saying? Her hand hovered over a knight, blue smoke escaping from between her lips in tiny wisps. She moved it and managed to fork my queen and rook. The game, along with my sobriety, was slipping away from me. Say what you will about my play on the board, but I'm enjoying this. I suppose I was right about you, she said softly. How do you mean? You rely more on instinct than logic, which is apparent from your play on the board. You can't see that far ahead, which is unfortunate. If you were able to, perhaps this game would have gone on a little longer. Are you always such a bitch? She smiled. Only when the mood strikes me. Evening again. The warm air of late summer drifts over my head as I look out to sea. The path between here, the hotel, and the lounge is all I've cared to traverse as I've drifted between the pages. It will be sunset soon, and I should get inside to avoid the shadows, but I need some fresh air to continue. In many ways, I was playing a winning game with Ophelia, for she often fell into my arms after being alone for so long. During the hours we continued to spend together, I began to feel a deep warmth grow within me. I began to see again, for I had been blind to my own power. Ophelia was truly mine for the taking, if I so chose. I came to realize this one night when we were stepping out for the evening at a private club in Midtown's Dragon Court. How did you get access to this place, Em? Special connections? You could say that. I spent as much time around the riffraff of the Dragon Court as I've spent in libraries. I appreciate the dichotomy, and I've learned much from both. Such as, leave no stone unturned. She stood close to me as we walked, practically enveloping herself in my trench coat. I lit a cigarette and exhaled the smoke into the night. Ophelia had consumed too much wine before we departed, and perhaps that was why she was clinging to me so tightly. As we stepped into the penumbra of a streetlight, I could see her mascara running. Are you crying, Ophelia? My God, what was wrong with you tonight? You won't leave my side tonight, will you, Em? Promise that you'll stay close. I promise, though I have to tell you that where we're going is not for the squeamish. Looking at me with large eyes and a weak smile, she returned to the crook of my arm without saying another word. My mind reeled at the thought of what the night was going to bring with Ophelia at my side. As we walked deeper into the Dragon Court and the light around us dispersed, I began to feel completely at ease, as though I were slipping under a warm blanket. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for that. Now, if anyone is interested in picking up a copy of any of Ryan's works, just go to Amazon, UK, USA, pretty much internationally, wherever Amazon is around and available. Now, what is going to follow is my non-nepotistic review. And the all truth is, a lot of the stuff that I read and review, we like it. It's the type of stuff that we like. And when Ryan sent it to me, my incentive isn't, I'm going to love this, I'm going to give it 5 stars. But Ryan is just a top quality prose smith. He is a wordsmith. He is a great writer. So here is my review for the Marianas Trench. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a solo episode.
How rude. I am here, you know.
Or a solo segment.
I am still here.
This may be an accumulation of solo segmentations. No, I wish to isolate this episode to one thing. So Laura will not be with me on this. This isn't a book club thing. This is a book that I got off Ryan Madej, a reviewer's copy, for me to review. And this is what the solo episode's going to be. We either are going to jam this into an episode at some point, or at some point down the line, we're going to have an accumulation of all of my solo reviews compiled into one episode. I haven't yet compiled them or listed them since I've updated my phone where I record my podcasts off. See, ladies and gents, if you like our podcast and you believe that we deserve the professional equipment, please donate or give us some money so we can do it, because all of it is just done on my Samsung cell phone or mobile phone if you're British, but the majority of our audience is American, and I have just done a disgrace to the American accent. But I want to thank Ryan for sending me this, because I know how costly it is when books are sent across the seas. I also know from my experiences of having done it so many times and never actually getting a review off anyone, of whom got physical copies, but you learn from your mistakes. And, you know, I like to reassure anyone who wishes for me to review their books, to give them a little bit of exposure, a little bit of limelight, or just to review their books and give my honest opinion and my unbiased opinion. If you send them Cross Continental such and sundry, I do. I make it a priority. I put that on my to-be-read pile. I finish what I'm reading at the time and I go straight into that, because I know from experience as well, sitting around going, I've spent this much on getting this book out to this guy, free of charge, where's my fucking review? But I'm different. I'm different in the case of, I actually, the books of which I inquire or show an interest in, of not only reading but reviewing, the majority of the time, I'm probably going to buy anyway, and I'm probably going to review anyway. So if anyone is willing to send reviewer copies in exchange for an honest review, and I try not to be as biased, but it's difficult because a lot of the books that I seek out and read and review are the things I like. And, you know, it's really hard not to be biased when it comes to Ryan Madej. Madej. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it wrong. I really hope I'm not. But let me kickstart this. The Marianas Trench by Ryan Madej. Simply perfect. It is utterly captivating. It is poetic and vast in metaphor, and philosophically weighted by what I can only call the philosopher of the artistic id. This book is obsession and allegory combined. It is diary. It is, in so many ways, it tries to lull you into this false sense of security of it being this thing or that thing. I love the mirroring of life reflecting art, art reflecting life. The story and the narrative, the real pinnacle and the real heart and centre of it is searching. And the lead, he's searching for wealth. He's searching for wealth, not materially or even selfishly. Or perhaps selfishly. In this book, it's delving in, seeking out a rare and perhaps final truth. In this book, this character is looking and is handed a rare and perhaps final manuscript by the likes of Mantra Hand, this almost popular, world, not so much world renowned, but locally renowned author and mysterious figure. And this manuscript lands on someone's desk and it is entitled The Marianas Trench. And it's handed to be archived and processed. And with this comes a disintegration of our narrators, dipping between works from Mantra to his diaries, to our lead's own tale of discovery of self as emulated through Mantra's art. We are also offered and afforded far greater insight to Mantra than our protagonist is, who soon breaks down in his resolve and almost want in attaining something altogether different from whatever originally it was that he thought he wanted. The raw and tenable quality of art made our heroes. It's a quality of that untenable, unread piece of art written by one of our heroes, and the strange connections we build and create and associate with them, and the catalogue of work, and how it is explored. And it is explored here, along with loads of characters, their engagements, and also very apparent their internal struggles. This book is also very noir, gumshoe. The world of Midtown is very beautifully well fleshed out. And this is one part of a tetralogy. tetralogy. There is a very deliberate nature to Ryan's world, whether this is the previous book that I read of his, or this one itself. This is a book where meta-constructs are used contextually and narratively in this story slash book, whilst perhaps reflecting on something rather more biographical. There are elements here that you can't really ascertain is related to this one specific motion or movement or idealised time in the book. It's beautiful. The prose is so engaging. It's captivating, beautiful. The allegory. And I got hold of Ryan and I said, how are you not picked up by the big boys at Penguin, Faber and Faber or Picador? Because works of this quality, this calibre, it infuses and lends a weight to publishing in the indie scene. Oh, for sure it fucking does. But I think that a literary agent out there who wants to hit up on someone who can offer the frills, the shrills, the chills, all the hills. He climbs a mountain, Ryan, when executing his stories, his manoeuvres to illustrate something that's not quite clear to us as the audience and reader, and also something to do with his antagonists or protagonists or characters. I have to give this book 5 stars. It is sensational. Sensational. And just go read it. Go buy it. There's not much more that can be said. I don't want to give away too much. It's a 150-page read, and I read it within three and a half hours. It is so moving. It is so well written. It is beautifully orchestrated. Yes, I think you do need to go out and buy this book and enjoy it. Ryan, his philosophy, his prose, his talent, his imagination, his soulfulness, his almost hyper attenuated themes, they carry across so purposefully and inherently ingrained in the texture and the manner and the verse. I love it. Please go buy it. Anyway, that will be the end of this episode. The previous segment was recorded a long, long time ago in a region of the UK, 30 miles away at Laura's house. Laura is currently sifting through underwear. What are you doing?
I'm leaving you.
Wow, what a great time to do it.
Solo review, baby.
What a great time. You're doing it whilst I'm recording an outro. No, seriously, baby, please don't go. Anyway, thank
you. I'm
gone. Anyway,
I'm not really leaving.
She's not really leaving. It looks like she is. Thank you, Ryan. Also, if you're interested in us to review a book, also, if there's any writers out there of whom aren't experimental or are independent romantic types or write the type of stuff that Laura is more prone to enjoying.
Write shit that's more mainstream so Laura likes it. That's yeah. So horrible.
Yeah, I can't really say
and
anything.
That's not true at all because of the submissions that I have read so far through Slip, Sweat, Drench, Press that are all experimental, none of which have I hated. So.
Well, that's reassuring, at least.
Based on that information, do you know what I want more than the non-experimental stuff? Do you know what I really want more than that? It's women, man. Okay.
You want women?
There are so many men, male authors out there. I'm sorry if you are non-binary. I don't mean to class you out. But what I mean is there are so many male experimental authors out there. And I just want to see more female experimental authors out there. And also non-binary ones too.
Awesome. I really hope the microphone picked that up, because I'm not recording it through our usual means. I'm recording it on a whole different recording device. But yeah, anyway, that is today's episode of Articulate Warbling. The next episode will be, God knows, I don't know, but...
Won't be long away.
Won't be long away. Just need to watch a few more films, I think. Read a few more books. And also, we need something big to happen to us. Although, touch wood, nothing so severe. But, you know, topic-wise, not personally-wise, is a goodbye from me.
It's a ta-ta for now from me.
And, yeah, remember to rate, review, and subscribe to Articulate Warbling. Again, another thank you to Ryan. And if you so wish to want to be part of the podcast, just reach out to us on our Facebook pages or on our Facebook wall.
Oh, and you can message us with anonymous things to be read out on your behalf without having to declare who you are.
So if there's any topic of discussion you feel that we're not paying our undivided audio podcastery attention to. So yeah. Ta-ta, goodbye, look after each other, wear your fucking masks, and wash your hands. Thank you, baked potato.